May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts always be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Last week, a group of Anglican leaders met in Abuja, Nigeria, to talk about the future of Anglicanism. Specifically, they're members of GAFCON, an organization of conservative Anglicans who have come into conflict with some other parts of the communion. Partly this conflict is about matters of governance and doctrine, but especially it's about matters of gender and human sexuality. Largely, GAFCON members are against same-sex partnerships and women's ordination. As this group met, many other Anglicans waited anxiously. We were afraid that this latest meeting would signal a clean break from the rest of the Anglican communion. This was especially because GAFCON had suggested beforehand that they might elect a new leader to rival the Archbishop of Canterbury, who is, of course, the ceremonial head of the Anglican communion. Also, as this group met, I was reading a book, The Promise of Anglicanism. This book was written only a few years ago in the wake of the ongoing GAFCON controversy. It argues that this kind of conflict in Anglicanism isn't new, that it goes back to the roots of our denomination and to the church itself. More importantly, it argues that conflict can be good. Conflict and debate, they say, can and do help us grow. They help us understand how God is calling us. They are powerful ways to discern the gifts that God has given us as we meet new situations and challenges. This is the history of Anglican liturgy. The way that we gather together every Sunday is the product of mostly healthy conflict between high church and low church Anglicans. It's the history of how our church is organized, including the peaceful way that we elected a bishop a couple weeks ago, which was itself the product of Anglican provinces fighting for independence from the Church of England. So much of who we are as Anglicans and as Christians is the result of fruitful tension worked out over hundreds of years. But what the book's authors say is key for those communities that are in conflict is not to give up on each other, not to stop talking, even if that means that we keep arguing. And of course, this is exactly what we were worried about might happen in Abuja, that the Anglican communion might stop talking for good. I was thinking about this idea of good conflict as I read the rather long gospel passage for today. Here is a story about conflict in a community of faith. Conflict in reaction to a new thing that God has done among them. This man who has been given sight is questioned by and then openly argues with other members of his community, his neighbors and the Pharisees. And the rest of the community, for their part, argues amongst themselves. Now, to be clear, this conflict is clearly not all good or healthy. Many participants, including the disciples, hold bigoted assumptions about disabled people, insisting that when a person is born blind, it must be because of sin. Others, like the man's parents, can't participate because of political fear. Even given all that, though, this is also a story about discernment and growth, not in spite of conflict, but because of it. Over the course of the narrative, we watch the man born blind grow in understanding of what happened to him and grow in courage in proclaiming the truth. When we first meet this man, he's silent. even as the disciples talk about him, even as Jesus wipes mud onto his eyes, even as he goes to wash off the mud, the man says nothing. Maybe he's confused at all that's happening. Maybe he's too scared to say anything. But either way, we don't hear from him at all until his neighbors start arguing amongst themselves about whether he's really the same person that they used to see. In this first encounter, the man can only identify himself and only retell the story just as it happened. Then, when the Pharisees come to investigate, also arguing amongst themselves, he repeats the story, but this time with an added detail. He calls Jesus a prophet. It's not that this man has received new information. It's not that he's seen Jesus again. He doesn't know where Jesus has gone. It's that this back and forth conversation has allowed him to understand and then to articulate something new about his own experience. When the Pharisees question him again, declaring Jesus a sinner, the man is even more sure and even more bold. "Why do you want to hear it again?" he asks. "Do you also want to become his disciple?" To which they answer, "You are his disciple." He's first identified as a disciple of Jesus, not by himself, but by those who are questioning him. And it is not the act of being healed that made him a disciple. It's the act of dialogue and debate, the act of telling his story over and over again, the act of answering questions and of asking questions. Even though some members of his community are hardly acting in good faith at this point, even though some of them believe that blindness made him sinful from birth, even despite all that, their act of debate is fuel for his ongoing understanding of what has happened to him, until the man is finally ready to declare to Jesus, "Lord, I believe." It is not just Jesus who has inspired this transformation from silence to understanding to bold faith. It's this man's community in conflict and heated dialogue. Of course, where we end this story, the man is no longer in dialogue with his neighbors. He has been driven out of his community. The conflict has borne fruit, but the conflict has also ended, preventing participants from finding common ground and taking part in healthier dialogue. It's left for us, the audience, to imagine what happens next. Now, the author of the Gospel of John is prone to black and white thinking. He often presents Christ followers and Jews as complete opposites. But we know that in Jesus' day, that just wasn't true. It would take many generations after Jesus' death for Christians to fully separate themselves from Jews. And Christ followers were not, at that time, driven from synagogues. So I want to imagine that the man was not exiled forever. I want to imagine that he didn't give up on his community and that his community didn't give up on him either. I want to imagine that they found a way to keep the conversation going and to keep bearing fruit. I want to imagine this because of what we're seeing with GAFCON today. This conflict over gender and human sexuality has been painful. It has not always been a healthy conflict. It's been marred by racism and colonialism, homophobia and sexism. But this conflict has also borne good fruit. This conflict has led to a greater understanding all throughout the Anglican Communion of sexuality and gender, ordination, how we read the Bible, how we make decisions. It has led to reimaginings of what it means to be the Anglican Communion, even and especially when we disagree with each other. And more importantly, we have not given up on each other. Not yet. The gathering in Nigeria 2 weeks ago didn't elect a rival primate, despite what many of us had feared. And many key members of GAFCON have said very clearly that they do not want to leave the Anglican Communion, even if they disagree about issues of gender and sexuality. Like our gospel story today, the ending is unwritten. It's left for us to pray for and to work for, a story that continues, a community that keeps talking to each other, and a communion that continues to bear fruit, not despite conflict, but because of it. Amen.